Welcome to the Acceptable Accuracy Podcast. This is Tyler.
And this is Tyler.
You are not Tyler.
This is...
Actually, when we go to Taco Bell, he is Tyler.
I am Tyler at Taco Bell. But no, this is Philip.
But yeah, so today is episode 10 of our podcast. And today is going to be the second installment of our head-to-head series. So what is our head-to-head today, Philip?
Today, we're going to talk about stamp collecting.
Oh my goodness. What do you mean by that? Can you expound on it?
Tax stamp collecting, specifically. We are going to talk about the SBR versus the pistol brace.
Okay. I love how you said pistol brace instead of just saying an AR pistol, but okay.
It could be an AK pistol. Well, I don't judge here, if they're from 1947.
Well, the thing, though, is you can put a pistol brace on a rifle.
Well, yes, and you can also put a pistol brace on not a, like what people could traditionally consider like a rifle platform. You could put a pistol brace on a Glock, for example, like if you got a Glock
chassis.
That's
true, the chassis. I didn't think about that. That's a good point.
Yep.
Or even, what was it, the Mossberg 590 Shockwave, I believe, because that is not technically considered a rifle or a pistol, but you can put a brace on it.
Yes. Tyler, could you put a brace on me?
Oh my goodness. You can do whatever you want, Philip. You are your own man, and it is your body and your choice.
Hey, you know, I'm gonna accept the brace. And I don't know why I'm gonna put a brace on me, but hey, you never know. You gotta get some straight teeth or something, some braces. There you go.
Braces. Did you ever have to get braces growing up?
I did.
Really?
I did. Even as an adult, I had braces too.
Is it because you didn't wear your...
No, I did, but they're, you know, when your parents, you know, I grew up, you know, we had enough money to make it through, but, you know, I had some teeth straightening I had to get done. So, you know, I went with the neon green. So when I would smile, it would be like, whew, man, it was extra special. Anyway, on podcast number 11, we're going to talk about.
Is it 11?
No, I'm saying like the next episode.
Oh, okay. I'm like, we're going to talk about
braces
on
for our teeth.
There we go. Perfect. Yeah. Believe it or not, I did not need to get braces.
You know what? Dental organizations, please sponsor us.
Yes. Dr. Jason Clore, please sponsor us. From Clore Family Dentistry. I will definitely give them a shout out because they actually are the best dentists I've ever been to.
Dentists.
Yeah. All right. Moving forward. So before we get into SBR versus an AR pistol, or I guess an AK pistol as well, whichever floats your boat, even though we are not a communist, but...
Yeah.
But let's go ahead and go into, why is that even a thing? Why is SBR and pistol brace, why is this even a debate? Before we go into that, how did the SBR even start, Philip?
Because the government sucks.
Exactly. That's true.
Pardon my French.
No, it's true. It's very true.
It does. So back in the 1920s, 1930s, this is like the supposed reason behind it. There were a bunch of issues with mobs, like, you know, classic mobs from, if you think of like the mobster movies and stuff like that. Sawing off the end of their shotguns, sawing off the end of their rifles, you know, having suppressors and that kind of stuff and stuffing them in trench coats. That was the reason why the government supposedly basically made it so that it was more difficult to get a short-barreled shotgun, suppressor, which we're not talking about today, but it's on that list. Made a lot harder, unfortunately, which is with us today. So back then, they added a $200 tax stamp, which was the equivalent of, like, today, probably
$6,000. I was about to say thousands.
So it was astronomically difficult to do it, and they found some way to say, hey, well, we're going to tax it. It's not actually a restriction on your rights, which it is. It's a taxation. But to me, it's a taxation on your rights.
Yes.
Right? So complete garbage. Most countries and nations that have way more strict gun laws than the United States have don't have these restrictions on short-barreled firearms. So in the NFA, they basically said...
And what is the NFA?
National Firearms Act.
Okay, yep.
of 1930 something.
I think it's 34 maybe.
Or 36 maybe. I don't remember. Anyway, 1930s, so yeah. Again, we're acceptable accuracy. We're getting it close.
It's close enough. But not close enough. It works.
Yes.
Good enough. C's get degrees, bro.
That's right. So as a result, we ended up with these stupid laws that basically said, and I didn't actually know this, and I don't want to get too deep into the weeds because I want to get into the subject, but I find this extremely fascinating. The initial overall length for both shotguns and rifles was 18 inches.
Really?
And as we know it today, in the NFA, it is actually 16 inches for a rifle.
Yes.
And then 18 inches for a shotgun.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Yep. And so why is that different? And that makes no sense. So granted, other than the fact that it's the government and it's arbitrary, right?
Yeah, no kidding.
I'm guessing the number initially was arbitrary anyway. But Forgotten Weapons actually did a video recently where they talked about this and they said that it originally was 18 inches for both.
Okay.
And then the U.S. government, after World War II, so this is a few years into the NFA, obviously.
Yep.
After World War II, they were selling off a bunch of their munitions, including, I believe it was the M1 carbine, which was like the backline parachuter, you know, rifle that they had an option to use. Anyway, that rifle had a 16-inch barrel, and the U.S. government was selling it to citizens, and they were making citizens felons as a result of selling them a 16-inch barrel rifle. So pretty much anything that the government, so they're the government, right? So they make the decision and they change the law pretty quickly once they realize what was going on. And that is why we are allowed to have 16-inch rifles versus 18-inch rifles. And that's a barrel. I shouldn't say it's not overall. It's the barrel length of the rifle. So in order for you to now legally have anything below 16 inches, you have to pay a tax stamp and get approval from the federal government, which includes your fingerprint reading,
yep.
recording,
fingerprints. Yep.
Fingerprints, background check. They send it all off to, I believe it's the FBI, does a background check on you, get the fingerprint cards in, all that stuff. And then after a arbitrary amount of time, basically when they get to you, they send the information back and you get approval and you get a tax stamp from them, which is literally a stamp. I have a few of them.
Really?
Yep, and they send it back to you. Nowadays, it's a digital stamp. You can still do a paper stamp if you choose to, but most people do a digital. It's a little bit faster now. As of the time of this recording, the turnovers on SBRs is really quick. I had one that I got done in 15 days.
That's insane.
I've heard that it's even quicker now, and same thing with suppressors. Apparently, they've started turning around. So I don't know what happened in that process to get them back out, but bureaucracy, or they have some nefarious reason just to get more people tracked. I don't know.
I guess so.
Through the backlog of the free brace to SBR.
Exactly. Anyway. Well, kind of like on top of what you mentioned, how the U.S. government loves to make their citizens felons overnight.
Mm-hmm.
I think of now moving to my side, talking about AR pistols and the pistol brace, how the whole ATF pistol brace ban debacle, how they wanted to ban pistol braces, and now you've got anywhere between 10 to 40 million pistol braces in circulation. And once again, so now we're looking at millions of Americans becoming felons overnight. This was a year ago, so I'm really glad. I mean, they're still doing court stuff with that right now, aren't they?
Yeah, it's just right now, again, I should also mention that, just giving a legal warning, we are not lawyers, so anything you hear on this podcast, take it with a grain of salt and as entertainment.
Nope. I know a lawyer, though, but
yeah.
but anyway, a lawyer.
consult any laws in your state, consult federal law, all that stuff, right? So this is just from our understanding and things that make sense to us.
Exactly. But we're a bunch of dudes who have acceptable accuracy, and I don't have an NFA item, so.
Yeah, I have a few, so. Yeah,
he's a tax collector.
I am a tax collector?
Stamp collector. Same thing.
Stamp collector.
And I'm a pastor. It's about to be Easter. What do you expect? So
yeah, so okay.
That's what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of Matthew, bro. But either way, so now talking about the pistol braces on my end. So talking about what Phil. So for those who don't know, we're going to talk about the AR-15 platform
primarily
in our context, yep. Primarily because truthfully that's what I'm more familiar with. So with an AR-15 rifle, like Philip said, your barrel has to be 16 inches or longer, and the total length has to be 26 inches or longer as well, I believe, from the buffer tube. So one thing when it comes to the barrel, some people, what they would like to do, what they do to minimize that barrel length is to do like a 14.5 and then pin and weld the, what's it called?
The flash header. Thank you. Or the comp on the
front. Exactly. The comp or the flash header. So now you're at 16 inches because most are 16 inches with that on top. So now you're looking at like a 17.5 or 18 even.
Right.
So...
And there are a lot of manufacturers that are going in that direction. Yes. So it's kind of an interesting way to get around NFA laws. Now, you don't get as short as maybe, you know, you would desire, especially if you're running, you know, a suppressor. So let's say you have, okay, I guess that's a question for you, Tyler.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you want a barrel shorter than 16 inches?
So for me, I have a AR-15 rifle that actually don't have a 16 inch. I have an 18 inch. That's what I started off with. It was a buddy of mine who had essentially had a ton of AR parts, and I bought two stripped lowers and I was like, hey, I want an AR. So we kind of built it together. All he had at the time was a 223 Wild 18 inch. And it was awesome. It was great. It was heavy. It was accurate, but it was heavy and it was long and it was hard to move around in. And if I decide to get a suppressor one day, now I'm adding even more length on top of it. So for me, my context is I'm a civilian and I got into guns, especially ARs, for home defense. So for me, I want something that's short. I want something that's where I'm able to move around corners easily and I'm able to protect myself and those in my home if I need to. And I want something that's light. So I don't want something super light, for example, like maybe like a 3-gun competition where they love like their right. race guns. That's not my context. My context would be home defense and if crap hits the fan. So for me, I want something that's small. I want something that's portable. And if I get a can on top of it, it doesn't add that much more bulk and weight to it. So for me, like even though I have an AR-15 rifle, Phil knows this. I shoot my AR pistol pretty much 100% of the time now.
Yeah.
When was the last time you saw me shoot my 18-inch?
It has been a very long time.
It's been years. Yeah.
I think even the last time I saw you shooting a 16-inch rifle was probably for last year's Wolverine 5.
It was because back then, at the end of May of 2023, that's when the pistol brace ban went into effect. And that was before all of our nationwide injunctions. So... as much as I wanted to, I chose not to only because it was too fresh, it was too soon, and that was something that I personally was not willing to take a risk in. So, yeah, that was the last time I used a 16-inch barrel. Now I use my 11.5-inch, and I love it. Don't know how, but I was able to hit 500 meters with that thing, no issues.
Yeah, and I would say
I was seated, benched with an LPVO, so I ain't that good, but... I gotta give a little bit of warning.
And you make a good point, too, with the need to have or desire to have a shorter barrel. Mm-hmm. There are many reasons why you would want one of those. And with a lot of the development in the newer calibers, so I think like 300 Blackout, though that's been around for a little bit now.
Oh, yeah.
350 Legend. Those calibers that do quite well, like with ballistics-wise, out of a shorter barrel,
mm-hmm.
And they were designed to be shot out of a shorter barrel for military purposes initially. So you can still get desired ballistic outcomes from a rifle, or I shouldn't say rifle, from a barrel that is shorter. So there is some viability in that, even other than just the cool factor of having a shorter and, you know, usability factor of having a shorter barrel.
Yeah.
So kind of out of that pistol brace ban, I was frustrated because I personally had a PCC that had a short barrel already. Yep. And I kind of got frustrated and I did not use the government's free brace to stock conversion thing. I did my own and paid my $200 tax stamp.
You know what's really frustrating for me during that pistol brace ban? How can the ATF, which is not Congress, have the authority to waive a $200 tax stamp? Now, I don't want to pay it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I want to pay it. I'm saying, where does the ATF have that authority?
Exactly. Where do they have the authority to make laws
That's
anyway?
That's true. It's not a law. It's a ruling. Yeah. One, it's a ruling. And two, now they're overreaching again by saying, hey, Congress, I know you're the one who made this law and required the tax stamp, but we're saying, nah.
Yeah, you just don't have to pay it. We're going to... And you can't do that. That's not how taxes work. You have to get those approved. So really extremely frustrating from that perspective. But I made the decision at that point that I didn't want to have to deal with this again. And I shoot enough competitions with my AR, and I do have a can. So I was already in the NFA registry anyway, that I knew that I wanted to have an SBR that I could dedicate for that can at all times to be able to use, no matter what the state of the brace band was from the ATF.
Yeah.
So I made the decision to do it. Now I have braced pistols as well. Mm-hmm. They're separate from this specific lower. This one isn't built with the intention of having an SBR.
Yeah.
So I guess that's one of the reasons why I chose to do an SBR versus a pistol brace. And there are some other advantages as well with that. Specifically, with the ability to have a stock on a SBR. Again, that's what you're basically paying for that tax stamp, right? Because you can't take a firearm with a barrel that is under 16 inches, unless again, pin welded, but under 16 inches, you cannot take and put a stock on that legally.
Yes.
So that is basically what we're looking at here. And the way that people kind of got around that was by putting the brace on it, right? So it was still a pistol, it was a braced pistol. So again, I made that decision that I wanted to be able to have a stock on a rifle.
Mm-hmm.
So paid the tax stamp, did the fingerprinting, did the background check, all that. Did it, you know, quote unquote, legally from, I shouldn't say quote unquote, because it is legal. Mm-hmm. But like what the ATF would define as, or Congress from 1936 or whatever it was, define as legal for an SBR.
You know, it's really interesting how during that time, so for me, with the pistol brace ban, with us being in a post-Bruin ruling world, I was very confident that that was going to get overturned. And of course, I don't think it's gotten overturned yet, because I haven't really kept up with it ever since the national injunction went in. Yeah. And granted, I'm also an FPC member and a GOA member,
yep,
and they both got injunctions as well. So for me, I was like, eh, I kind of stopped caring after that. But I already knew it was going to get overturned, because even bump stocks got overturned. The bump stock ban got overturned.
Yeah, that is currently still caught up in the courts as well.
Okay.
Yeah. So some courts have said it's legal and some have said it's not. So it's kind of this weird limbo right now.
Gotcha. As well. So with that, I was very confident, but I knew with the pistol brace side in general, of course, you have SBA Tactical, because they're the ones who started the pistol braces. How they met with when they had the initial meeting with the ATF, got everything set and ready to go, because for those who don't know, pistol braces were originally made for disabled veterans. That's why pistol braces were made. So this way, disabled veterans are able to defend themselves as well and still use an AR-15. And SBA Tactical went through everything, mm-hmm, with the ATF, and ATF said, yep, that's a great idea. We love it. We're going to take care of it. Yep. Perfect. And of course, later on, what does ATF do? Pistol braces are bad. And then they kept having a back and forth over and over and over again. Yeah. They're like, nope. They're saying things like, well, people are not using pistol braces the way that was intended, so we got to get rid of it. To rulings like, well, we can't stop people from using things how they're not designed.
Right.
To actually, let's just get rid of it completely. To like, to a point, we'll see.
To even like a point system, and then they... Like,
that's right, I forgot about the point system.
There's, and again, there's a lot of weirdness on how like ATF presented the rule change, and then how it, like, initially for public comment, and then how it actually ended up. So I think that's one of the reasons why it did get overturned, because they changed their mind,
mm-hmm,
after the public comment period, which you can't really do, even though, again, the ATF
That also goes to show how important it is to make your voice known.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Comment. Reach out to them. Tell them, like, hey, this is not okay. Because they have to listen. If there's enough feedback, if there's enough pushback from the people, they have to listen. And they should listen. And that's the beauty, because who is the government?
Well, we are. I mean,
we are. We the people.
I mean,
that's what I'm saying. Well, according to the Constitution, in theory, yes.
I know. Yeah, we the people.
But it's we the people. That's a preamble of the Constitution. So it's us, bro.
Yeah. So, okay. What are some of the advantages of having a brace then, Tyler? Like, I know that you have chosen up to this point to not do an SBR and get your tax stamp for that.
Yes. So
what are some of the reasons why you have not chosen to do that yet, or chose to do that yet?
So for one, like I said earlier, I do not have any stamps in my collection. So I would like to keep it that way, but I do want a suppressor on my end. So that's kind of one thing I'm like, ugh, I kind of want to do that. I want a suppressor. I want a can. But for me, it's like, I know the government already has all my information, but I don't want to willingly give it to them. Mm-hmm. And I know, in theory, I don't want the ATF knocking my doors like, hey, we want to come and see your stuff. Or at least my NFA items.
Yeah, because NFA laws get a little weird, too, where depending on how you register the NFA item, if you do it as a trust, then you can add people to the trust.
Yes.
And then anyone, in theory, on that trust can use the SBR, no matter like who's around. Right. If you have them individually, then they have to be locked up, non-accessible.
Yes.
By anyone else that may be in that place where it's stored. Right. Mm-hmm. Whether that's in your home. I mean, I assume you can do it in a business. I don't know. I don't own my own business, so I don't know. But they have to be locked up and stored. So there's some more restrictions in that regard. Whereas if it's you and your spouse and you have an AR pistol, I mean, obviously you still want it locked up, but you don't have to have it locked up separate from your other items. Because right now I have all my NFA items are locked up separately with an access that only I have, with a code that only I have.
Yeah.
Because of the stupid law.
Exactly. That makes sense.
Yep.
Wow, that's really interesting. So that's kind of one of the reasons why I chose to do that. Of course, I like having an AR pistol. I just have to, unfortunately, work around some restrictions like I can't have a stock on my pistol. So
there's other restrictions as well, too. But
that's true. Yeah. And another thing that I can think of off the top of my head is I cannot have a vertical grip on my AR pistol, but I can have an 86 degree angled foregrip on it.
Yeah,
again, which is what I have, which is hilarious to me because it's not 90 degrees.
Yeah.
It is not a vertical 90 degree grip. It is an 86 degree angled foregrip.
Yeah, because for some reason, and I don't actually know the reasoning behind why you can't have a vertical grip. I think I knew at one point, but again,
I have no idea, man.
And then why you can do like an angled, but not a whatever.
Yeah, whatever. But what's also nice too, because in our context in Michigan, we don't have a CCW or a concealed carry weapon permit. We have a CPL, which is a concealed pistol license. So for us, because of the restrictions that Michigan has on AR-15, really on rifles in general, you cannot have, your rifle must be in a case in your trunk, or at least as far away from you as possible if there's no room in your trunk, at least inaccessible to you. And so the wording of the law is, I feel like, very up to interpretation, unfortunately.
It's a little vague.
It's very vague, which unfortunately Michigan's very vague in a lot of their laws, like knife laws, extremely vague here. So with the rifle, some people will interpret it as your ammo cannot be in your gun, but your mags can be loaded. But other people interpret it as your mags cannot be loaded at all, and that your mags have to be separated from your ammo or something like that.
Right.
Or at least your ammo has to be not in the mag. So basically your gun has to be empty in transportation either way. And it has to be in your trunk. Whereas if it's a pistol, if you have a CPL, you're able to, I can have my AR pistol slung up around my neck if I wanted to. When I'm in my car. Because it's a pistol. And I have a CPL, so I can have it anywhere in my car with me. Same with my handgun, my concealed, my actual carry gun. Whereas with the rifle, with my AR-15 rifle, I can't do that. It has to be in my trunk. So now my question for you, Philip, for you who has an SBR, now it is a rifle federally, right?
Correct.
So how does that work for you? Can you carry your SBR in your car?
Yeah, so that's a really weird one. And this is where I want to be clear again that we're not giving legal advice about anything, especially for this any state. Like, and obviously we're in Michigan because we talked about it before. But when I got my, so for example, I have a PCC that is, even with the stock, fully extended, if that's where they would be judged because it's an SBR. It is still under 26 inches. But when it was purchased and it was registered with the state of Michigan as a pistol initially, and then with the federal government converted it to an SBR, right? But for the state of Michigan, it's still considered a pistol. And this is where the law gets weird because
when you make an SBR, don't you have to take pictures and submit that or something?
I do.
So when you had your AR-15 pistol,
you take pictures without the stock on it.
Okay, that was my question. I'm like, wait a minute. Yep. Are they purposefully asking you to put
stock on? And that is actually one of the things that came up with the ban from the ATF regarding pistols because mm-hmm. you were basically admitting to the ATF that you had a brace on there and you were submitting photos. Now, my question I had was, well, why would you just take the brace off and then submit the photo? But then some people were saying you had to have it. So, again, I didn't go through that whole process just because I didn't want to deal with that. Again, no. It's been very nebulous. And if you're a lawyer out there and you're listening to this and you want to comment, we'll gladly have you on and talk all about these legal things. But, again, we're not, so don't take any of this as legal advice. But things get a little weird because I have what's considered a pistol in the state of Michigan.
Yep.
But for the federal government, it's now considered a rifle.
Yeah, it's weird.
But the state of Michigan has, they from what I've understood, is they basically say that we follow federal NFA laws.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, in the state of Michigan, it's a pistol. Federal government's a rifle. The federal government doesn't have any laws themselves about concealed carry, which makes it even weirder because they don't really care what it is as long as you give them their $200 and then do things legally, right? So that's why things get really weird and really nebulous. So for those people who want to keep a AR in their vehicle, they can do so by having a brace on it and not really have to deal with those laws as well, as long as it's under that overall 26-inch requirement that we have here in the state of Michigan, for example.
So right here, according to the state of Michigan, so Michigan.gov, an SBS or an SBR that is 26 inches or less in length is considered a pistol.
Well, there you go, right there.
Yeah, so it's actually, yeah. This is so straight from their website.
Yeah, which is really weird because, again, I can...
This is as of March of 2014, though. Right. So.
And that's why things get weird with laws. And that's why it almost seems like there's a trap to try to get the average, person like us and our listeners, hopefully, who are legal firearms owners. They feel like there's always trying to trap you, right? By having these really weird laws.
Well, it's even, I think of, we had this situation where you have a, because here in Michigan, technically, we don't register our pistols here. It is a pistol sales record, which is, you're registering your gun. Here,
yeah, you're registering.
Real. Let's be real.
Yes, yeah.
So let's say someone has a stripped lower.
Yep.
And now they make it into a pistol. Right. I technically manufactured an AR pistol. So I have not sold it to myself.
Right.
And yet I still need to fill out the form.
Yeah.
But I don't.
Because on the form for the state of Michigan, and I don't want to get too far in the weeds in this either, but in the form in Michigan, there's a buyer and a seller.
And am I the buyer and the seller?
Exactly. If you call, because I actually called the state police on this.
Uh-huh.
And if you call them, they want you to, quote unquote, register it
of
with them
they
by
do.
Doing the pistol sales record.
So, but either way, that okay, is...
Now, here's the really interesting question.
Yeah.
Right now, we're both CPL holders in the state of Michigan. If I go to buy a firearm, I don't have to deal with the extra step of getting permission to buy a firearm.
Yes.
If I were to make a pistol, would I have to get permission to make a pistol now? I don't want to get deep in the weeds in that.
Huh, that's a great question. I have no idea.
Okay, so other reasons why I like having an SBR. I don't run vertical grips on stuff. I like the opportunity. I could if I wanted to. Actually, I do have a vertical grip on my SBR, my 9mm PCC SBR, because it's so short. It's like literally it's a 4.23 barrel.
That thing has a shorter barrel than our carry guns. Well, my carry gun.
It does. Which I think is just hilarious. That's one of the reasons why I SBR'd it, because it was so tiny. Right?
Yeah.
It was a very small package.
Yeah.
Don't go there. Anyway, but it does give me the option to run that a vertical grip on that, right?
Yeah.
So again, I could do the weird 86 degree angle thing or whatever, but I don't have to worry about it. Right? I slap a vertical grip on it because I can, because it's an SBR.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. The other advantage is, again, you can have a stock on there, which, when shouldered, because it is an SBR and it's all legal, it's a stable platform when you are shouldering it.
Yes.
I can swap, stocks in and out. There is honestly a bit of that coolness factor. There's that like next level, coolness factor when you go show up at a match. It's kind of cool. You see some SBRs, what kind of SBRs are they running? So that was one thing that I thought was really nice. I did it as well because I wanted to be able to, I had a can already.
Yep.
And I wanted to be able to run a can on it. And even with a can on my AR rifle that I have, or AR SBR that I have, It is still shorter than 16 inches. So it's still very maneuverable, that's especially crazy. With my shorter configuration of my
that's can. That's awesome.
So there's a lot of use with that. However, it comes with some challenges.
Mm-hmm.
So we are obviously out of Michigan. If I want to go to a match within Michigan or a range or whatever it may be within Michigan, I can take it with me just fine. I don't have to tell anybody about it,
mm-hmm.
right? It comes with me. I have my NFA paperwork, which is also another annoyance. You have to have that with you at all times when you have it.
Can it be digital or does it have to be printed?
I'm pretty sure it has to be printed. Okay. So I print copies. I put it in my case of every gun case I have has a copy of it in it.
Gotcha. Nice.
But if I'm in Michigan, that's great. That's fine. However, if I want to shoot a match in a different state, which I did last year, I have to fill out another ATF form. I don't have to pay anything, but I have to get permission from them, and I can submit it digitally, but you cannot receive it back digitally from them. They have to actually mail it to you.
So you have to wait to get approval, and then you can leave.
Yes, and they have a pretty good turnover, and you can do, I forget how far out in advance you can do it, and you can, like if you wanted, I could say, for the month of October, I'm going to take my SBR mm-hmm. to a different state, right? Yeah. Now, that you have also... to do that
with suppressor, sewer, just your SBR.
Don't have to do that with suppressors, which nice, is really okay. weird.
That's weird.
I don't understand that. Again, well, the rules and laws are very strange.
Well, the argument is, why are suppressors even in a National Firearms Act?
Because they're not a firearm.
Yeah. Exactly. But moving on, I digress. Yep.
So, and then the other weird thing is you have to consider where if I take my SBR to a state, I have to verify that state even allows to have SBRs in the state as well. So again, there's some inconvenience in that factor. Or even if I'm transporting it from or through another state, I have to make sure that legally I'm allowed to have a SBR in that state while I'm driving, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it gets a little weird, right? And then I have to have that NFA paperwork with me that says, hey, I legally have permission from the ATF to take it from point A to point B. Mm-hmm. Which I have done once so far, and it was not really that big of a pain. The form is pretty easy to fill out. The ATF turned it over pretty quickly. I think it was like 15 days of the form in my mailbox.
Nice.
But it was still just something that you have to
that deal is frustrating,
with.
Man.
Even just to have that coolness extra.
Because, so I guess the question is, with that form, like, how would they ever... This is a hypothetical question. Mm-hmm. How would they even know?
If I have that form?
Yeah.
Well, like, that's the
do
weird...
you get pulled over or something?
So that's the weird thing. I
don't get it.
Because I looked into this a little bit. Again, it's not legal advice.
Of course, yeah.
The person that would request that paperwork would have to be acting as an agent of the federal government. And I don't know if it's specifically the ATF.
Mm-hmm.
But it's weird because I don't think a state trooper could necessarily ask you for it. Now, they could pull you over and they could be like, oh, hey, you have an SBR in here. Wait here while I call my local ATF office and have somebody show up to check your paperwork, right? Like, they could be real jerks about it if they chose to. So there's a lot of weird legal issues that you have to deal with as an SBR. Again, that feels like it's a trap.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to do your research.
Yep.
And thankfully, we are in the golden age of information. Now, it's not always true. I did a bunch of research, and I encourage you all to do this. Talk to a lawyer. There's a lot of lawyer websites out there that have this information. But get this information, you know, from a lawyer, you know, from the ATF website before you do something. And a lot of people on this that are listening may say, well, you know, just fight the power and do what you want. Yes, but I have a family. I can't go to jail.
Yeah.
Right. So unfortunately, I have to play by the rules.
Didn't Tennessee just pass, or at least maybe not just pass, but a while ago that they don't care and they can just have SBRs and SBSs now?
I know Texas did something like that with suppressors.
How does that even work?
With suppressors too, where they said that if it was
manufactured
in the state and it remained in the state that you could do it. I think that actually may be tied up in the courts as well.
I think it is. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, they got attacked.
They got smacked down.
Real quick.
Yep.
But it's Texas. They do whatever they want. I love Texas, man. They got good food.
Yeah. So again, this is why everything is so stinking nebulous and like confusing. I couldn't imagine trying to do this, you know, prior, like in the 80s when you're trying to get an SBR, trying to do things legally to figure it out, what you're supposed to do. And that is why I love the United States and I love capitalism and the inventiveness of people that created the pistol brace.
It's true. Go SBA Tactical, bro.
Yep. Because you can then legally, currently, have a brace on a firearm and get very similar performance that you would, like an SBR that you would be very similar to like a braced yes. firearm.
Well, what's cool is because they just came out, they just released their SBA 5 brace, which I, okay, the SBA, he likes his water.
I do.
So the SBA 4 is much more stable and resembles a stock more than the SBA 3.
But it's not stock.
But it's not stock.
Yep.
But I do not like where the QD mount is on the SBA 4. I prefer where the QD mount is. This is all tiny little technicalities for me
yeah.
on the SBA 3. So from what it looks like, the SBA 5 looks like a more stable, just like the 4, but the QD mount is where I like it. But my problem is I don't know if I want to spend $100 on a brace. That's my issue. I'm like,
I know.
So people are saying, well, do you want to pay $200 for a tax step or $100 for a brace? I'm like, I don't want to do either, man. But
right.
I'd rather pay the money for the brace at this point. So
what's really interesting too, and I think that, I know we're doing a head-to-head here, and I'm supposed to be on the SBR side, but there are some really cool innovation that's coming out of the market from a pistol chassis as well.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of, and you could make the chassis system, you could also, or that, mm-hmm. I guess, the, whatever you're putting in it, you could also register that pistol as a SBR as well. But there's a lot of things to be said about those who want to have a quote unquote like truck gun
That's
or
true.
Truck rifle, I guess be more of a it's not a rifle because it's still a pistol. To have more capabilities out of a firearm that you have in your vehicle.
Yeah.
Right. So inherently by having a pistol or a SBR, I guess if it's legal in your state, in your vehicle or whatever your state laws are, there's always a risk of having that in there of it getting stolen.
Well, it'd be cool right. if you had just the chassis.
Correct.
That works for your concealed carry rig.
Yep.
Just pop it around. It's like, bam, now you got the 4 points of contact. 3 points.
Yep, yeah. 3 points. And so there's
well, a... four.
There's,
four.
There is a...
Both hands, shoulder, and cheek.
Sure, yeah.
So 4 points, yeah. bro.
And there is a lot to be said about having that capability, but then you have just the chassis inside of your vehicle. And if it gets stolen, it's not a firearm, it's a chassis.
Yeah.
So there's... You're not putting, you know... firearms into criminal hands, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot to be said, again, interfacing with your carry gun, and there's a lot of innovation in that space where there's been some really usable chassis systems
yes.
that have come out as a result. I know we've got a few friends that have started looking into that.
I know.
So the nice thing is, again, you don't have to worry about, if you do the braced version, you don't have to worry about doing your NFA paperwork
mm-hmm.
for that your concealed carry pistol, which again makes things really weird from a legal perspective if you leave the state, you know, to another state that has friendly transferable concealed carry pistol licenses. Again, unfortunately, all these laws make things really difficult for citizens like us who are trying our best to not break the law, mm-hmm. right? And it does require a lot of research and a lot of responsibility to not break said laws.
Exactly. Once again, there's so many hoops and hurdles. And of course, too, it's so vague. So it's really hard to tell. You don't really know how, what to do because of it. Because it's like, now it's all up to interpretation now. And it makes it so much harder. So, yeah.
Yep. So anyway, I guess to kind of round out the conversation here, there are advantages and disadvantages to both, right? Ideally, and it became a very, like, law and legal conversation from a point of which we don't necessarily understand everything, right? From, okay, not understand. We understand a lot of it. We're not giving legal advice again. But it's become a very interesting conversation around the difficulties of being a legal citizen. Ideal outcome of the pistol brace argument, high level, if like everything happened the way it should, is the NFA gets struck down.
Oh, no question. NFA and was it GCA as well? That'd be great.
The GCA?
Gun Control Act.
Oh.
You haven't heard of the GCA?
Is that new?
No, that was like the 70s.
Oh, you mean for the full autos?
Okay. And all yeah. that, yeah. Because yep. the GCA was made basically to kind of be on top to help out the NFA as well.
Right.
So it'd be great to get yep. rid of both of them. Basically just get rid of almost every three-letter organization, three-letter acts. Be great.
Be fantastic.
ATF, FBI, CIA. Love you guys. Not really. So, CIA killed Kennedy, but...
Yeah.
No one said anything about that, man.
We're gonna get scrubbed off of
it's
of
like, yep, podcasts. That's right. I wouldn't care, whatever. But either way, so, Any closing thoughts? Any closing thoughts, Philip?
Okay, closing thoughts on this. If you are going to do NFA items, do your research.
Yes.
Make sure that you are following all the rules. I did, when I did research on this, I did a ton of research. Mm-hmm. I found multiple sources telling basically what you're supposed to do, including the ATF website, a few legal websites. And as soon as information starts to line up from multiple locations, I'm like, all right, this stuff makes sense. If you are going to do a suppressor, you're already, and if you're worried about being in a registry or whatever, you're already in there, so you might as well do a couple NFA items as well. Plus, they're really stinking cool. So, do that. But then,
80%,
the other thing I would recommend is that you join a organization and donate to organizations that are fighting against the pistol brace ban.
Yes.
In hopes of getting the NFA overturned.
Yes.
Right. So I think of like the Firearms Policy Coalition, yep. Gun Owners of America.
Yep.
Those are both of those organizations have injunctions currently, even prior to the global injunction for,
yes.
or the nationwide injunction for the current.
That'd be great if we had a global injunction.
Yeah.
That's how powerful America is.
Freedom all over the place. So donate to those places if you can. If not, like Tyler said earlier, you know, whenever there's comment on ATF rule changes,
exactly. Comment. Make your voice known.
Yep.
Your voice known. It's important.
And buy this stuff.
Because
the more we proliferate our country with braces, AR-15s, AK-47s, whatever your SCARs, okay. ACRs, I don't know who's buying an ACR, right. Jackals, the more that we are bought.
Daggers.
The harder. But that's a pistol.
Sabers.
Right? Yeah. Dagger sabers. War poets. Poets.
Yeah, bro.
The more that you are purchasing those items, the more prolific they are, the harder they are to get rid of. And it's like the owner of PSA said.
Yeah.
He said, we're selling a lot of these items. I know they're making money off of them. But the more you get out there, if there is ever an AR-15 ban, there's still way more out there than there ever were full autos prior to the ban in the 80s. Right? So the transferable fully automatic firearms are stupid expensive now as a result.
Yes.
But think about, like, you know, 20 years from now, if they do decide to ban AR-15s, you can still transfer them, and the cost will not be astronomically high.
Yes.
In theory.
Yeah, no kidding.
Tyler, parting shots?
Well, on top of what he was... parting shots. That's great. Well, even in addition to what you just mentioned, how going back to the pistol brace, when they tried to ban it, there are up to 40 million in circulation. And I think when they tried to get everyone to get the quote-unquote free registry or tax stamp, I think only like 2%, 2 or 3% of people actually did it.
Hey, good job, America.
I know, right? Great job, America. People are like, no, we're not going to do this. So, great job to you, 90%+. You got an A, America. Great job.
Unlike us with our C over here.
Yeah. But either way, so, like Philip said, do your research. Make your voice known. That's what's most important. And hang out with your buddies. Make guns fun again.
I know. Have a great time. Go take people shooting that have not shot before.
Exactly. I know. I'm actually about to take like 3 or 4 buddies out shooting in a couple of weeks. So that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah. So. And it's interesting because there was a lot of stuff that came out of recent events. I don't want to dig into those. I feel like they're beat to death. But I think COVID and the political unrest and stuff. And I have plenty of acquaintances that I know that traditionally firearms are viewed as a conservative thing, a Republican thing. But there are a lot of liberal gun owners out there. And good on you guys.
Yes.
The more people that we get out there that understand firearms, the more that they will understand how stupid some of these laws are. And the more that it makes it difficult to get these changed. If you've noticed lately, there's not been a lot of nationwide attempts to do, they'll always try, but they're kind of fail, to ban firearms, right? The states are doing it, like, you know, Illinois has got some bad stuff. Washington State has some bad stuff on there. Michigan's done some dumb stuff lately, too. But in general, there's not a lot of appetite for that market because there's a lot of gun owners out there.
Exactly. And don't touch our guns, man. We have our First Amendment because of our Second Amendment. So,
yeah.
All right, let's go ahead and close. So, Philip, any dad advice?
Oh, dad advice today. Man, my dad advice for you is to follow us on Instagram and like and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.
You don't subscribe on a podcast.
Sure you can. You go to Apple Podcasts and you subscribe.
You follow.
Follow. Fine. And write a review. I'm gonna put it out here that if you write a review, and if it's like if it's a fun review or you know whatever, we'll read it live on our next podcast.
Who knows? We might even send you a patch.
That's fair. We're working on our acceptable accuracy patches. So
anyway, I'll go with sending out a patch.
No, my dad advice is get involved with your community. Everything starts local, moves up. Get involved as a dad with your family.
Yep.
You know, be there for your kids. Nobody's ever going to be a perfect father. But I'll tell you what, having a father there is super important. And there's, like, all the statistics show that if you have a father in the household, that your kids are going to do way better.
100%.
Even if you're not a perfect father. Nobody is. Mm-hmm. Kids are going to do way better off in life and have a lot less issues later on.
It's very true.
Be there.
I 100% agree. So my dad advice is from Dr. John Deloney. He says to kind of caveat is, I'm Gen Z. So I'm at the line of Gen Z and Millennial. And Gen Z and young Millennials are considered the most anxious generation that we've ever seen.
Mm.
And a part of that is because we're so addicted to our phones.
Yep.
And we're addicted to social media and entertainment that we have created shallow friendships and relationships. So Dr. Deloney says, to build a non-anxious life, you have to choose to invite other people into your life, knee to knee and shoulder to shoulder. You have to choose openness. You have to choose awkwardness. You have to choose to not live a life of isolation. You must choose connection. Hmm. So I'm really thankful for guys like Philip and other men in my life where whenever I go through hard times, like, I've broken down in front of them. Like, they've seen me cry a lot more than I would like to admit. But they're there for me. It was awkward. I know it was for them. But I needed that because I've chosen isolation for. That's natural for me. But if I didn't choose to open up to them, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. So, choose openness, choose connection.
I would add on to that, in closing, within the firearms community, especially in the competitive firearms community where USPSA, IDPA, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I know we talk about this a lot, but there is a lot of real relationships to be built, especially for men.
Agreed.
Around men love building relationships around things. Like, yes. Like events, I should say.
Doing stuff. Action.
Like action.
Adventure. Right? Yes.
Obviously you can record yourself, and that's people love recording themselves, you know, shooting guns and stuff like that. And that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. But I'm about to start doing that.
But yeah, Mr. Cat Cam over here.
I know, right?
But there is a lot of community that is out there that's very real.
Yes.
And a lot of great relationships that have developed out of people that I have met in the firearms community, again, mm-hmm. whether it's through competition, whether it's the safety team at church,
yep.
whether it's just going out the range and having fun,
mm-hmm.
Talking about that stuff. It is it's a freedom that we have as a nation, and it is something that we can bond over that is not fake like social media is.
Agreed.
Right. So
I think of even Brent and Daryl, how, of course, we all became buddies through USPSA, yep. but once we started doing the Wolverine 5K together, we're brothers, man.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yep.
It's important to have those types of relationships. It's so vital, especially with men who are so isolated today.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, because of the rise of feminism and with the rise of alpha females, now we've got the rise of beta males, unfortunately. Yeah. And we have weak men. And hard times are here. We need strong men. And strong men get there through, yes, opposition, but also through connection and friendships.
And I think that when you have these connections, especially ones that are made through the firearms community, and there are a lot of women that shoot now too. But especially with our brothers in arms, there is a lot of there's a lot of masculinity like to be built.
Yes.
And if you find the right people in those communities, there's a lot of I would argue that there is nothing as toxic masculinity.
Oh yeah.
That's more of being a toxic person,
Andrew
right?
Tate.
Yeah.
I'll call him out. I don't care.
So people always assume that just because you're like an alpha male that you are toxic. That is a complete, if you are a true alpha male, you are taking care of those around you. You are taking care of, mm-hmm. you know, your spouse.
Yep.
Then you are watching out for your best of your community.
Come on, say your favorite Jordan Peterson quote, bro.
Yeah, I'll let you say it.
I don't remember it.
Yeah, it's saying something along the lines of basically being more afraid of a weak male than it is of a dangerous male, something along that.
That's a dangerous man.
But I think that we should also be, all men should be, like, should be have the ability to be dangerous, right? 100%. But to completely have that under control.
100%.
I think that's one of his lines.
Well, it's the balance of what John Lovell likes to teach about being the warrior and the poet, the lion and the lamb. That's what it is. That's who Jesus was. He was a perfect balance of the two. So that's why we're here, man. That's what men ought to be. Someone who is the most dangerous person in the room, but who absolutely loves their family,
yep,
their friends, their community, who's able to be soft and gentle and kind, but at the same time, in a minute's notice, take somebody down if they need to.
Right. Yeah, take somebody down that is, you know, threatening. Evil. Threatening. Yep, taking evil down.
Taking evil down. Yeah, I gotta clarify that. Yeah. But all that to say,
subscribe.
Like, follow,
comment,
rate, review. Thanks for listening, guys. Have a great day.
And we'll see you next time on the Acceptable Accuracy Podcast.